Jobsite News presents Epstein, Israel, and the CIA. How the Iran-Contra planes landed at Les Wexner's base. When a Southern Air transport plane was shot down over Nicaragua in October 1986, the world got a rare window into US government covert activity. Southern Air Transport was a small cargo airline founded in 1947. That was the year the Central Intelligence Agency was created, as the US pivoted to a Cold War posture. The CIA owned the airline from 1960 until 1973. Then, it was sold to Stanley G. Williams, the chief operating officer, who ran private missions for the CIA. The downing of the Southern Air cargo plane pulled a string that eventually unraveled the scandal known as Iran-Contra. The CIA was shipping weapons to Iran, using Israel as a middleman. The profits from the arms were used to fund the Contra rebel army in Nicaragua in a civil war against the leftist government. None of it was legal, and Southern Air Transport was getting too hot. In need of a new mission, the company relocated its headquarters from Miami, Florida, to Columbus, Ohio. The company rebranded by flying imported shipments of clothing from China. But for 3 years in Columbus, the airline was rumored to be involved in smuggling cocaine. According to veteran Columbus journalist Bob Fitrakis, investigators in the Franklin County Sheriff's Office and Ohio's Office of Inspector General were looking into Southern Air Transport amid rising public scrutiny of the Iran-Contra affair. Sources in both offices identified Jeffrey Epstein as having a pivotal role in moving the planes to Ohio. At the time, Epstein was a relatively obscure financier managing the money of Ohio-based fashion mogul Leslie Wexner. Under Epstein's stewardship of the Wexner Empire, the planes that previously carried the CIA's covert weapons shipments were repurposed to deliver clothes to Wexner's retail chains, including Victoria's Secret and Abercrombie and Fitch. Southern Air Transport abruptly declared bankruptcy on October 1, 1998, exactly 1 week before the CIA released its official findings on the Iran-Contra affair, which surfaced all the allegations of Contra cocaine trafficking from Nicaragua. Under pressure from the governor's office, Ohio officials dropped their inquiries, meaning that Epstein's role never became public. How did Epstein end up moving the former Contra planes to Columbus? The Iran-Contra scandal defined the second half of the Reagan administration, and it gave the public a clear look inside the US government's clandestine global operations. Like a spy service Forrest Gump, Jeffrey Epstein can be found there every leg of the way. Part 1. Finding Hidden Money. In 1981, Jeffrey Epstein resigned from Bear Stearns amid suspicions of insider trading. He began traveling regularly to London, where he grew close with the family of Douglas Leese, a British businessman with a long career in the aerospace industry. Epstein became Leese's protege and fast friends with his sons Nicholas and Julian. After World War II, Leese was put in charge of his father's company, Cam Gears, a steering gear manufacturer that supplied Jaguar, Ford, Nissan, and other global auto brands. In 1965, the company was sold to TRW, a US aerospace conglomerate known for satellites and intercontinental ballistic missiles. 1979 was a revolutionary year in the Persian Gulf. Saddam Hussein became president of Iraq and swiftly executed and imprisoned his political rivals. Across Iraq's eastern border, the people of Iran overthrew the puppet monarchy the CIA had installed after World War II. During Iran's revolution, university students seized the US embassy in Tehran and took Americans as hostages, leading the US to impose harsh economic and military sanctions on Ayatollah Khomeini's regime. The CIA planned to fuel a war between Iran and Iraq to ensure neither Hussein nor Khomeini could gain control of the Strait of Hormuz, and keep the Soviet Navy out of the Gulf. But the hostage crisis added a wrinkle to their plans. The US was prohibited from selling weapons to Iran, as it would violate the arms embargo and undermine President Ronald Reagan's public position that America did not bargain with terrorists. Instead, the CIA tacitly supported weapons sales from China, and Beijing began shipping armaments to both Iran and Iraq in 1980. In spring 1983, Iran signed a $1.3 billion arms deal with China. These weapons were supplied in part by Chinese manufacturing conglomerate Norinco, using British Hong Kong as the transshipment point. Epstein's British mentor, Douglas Leese, owned a company called LORAD, based in Bermuda. Soon after the Iran arms deal was signed, a shell company called Norinco LORAD was formed in Bermuda. A Hong Kong trading company called LORAD Far East followed a few months later. Leese's exact role in China's weapon sales has never been made public. But in 1995, a British MP alleged Leese had secretly funded Middle East arms deals using a Bermuda bank. That year, the owners of British retail chain Littlewoods raised alarm bells about Leese's arms trafficking ties. As they were working with LORAD to ship manufactured goods from China, they received a proposal for Norinco to sell washing machines to Littlewoods and weapons to LORAD. 2 years later, in a US civil complaint against the Littlewoods owners, Leese claimed his work concerned highly sensitive projects, believed to be classified by the Department of Defense and other agencies of the United States government. Meanwhile, the CIA prepared its own covert pipeline to ship American-made weapons to Iran. In fall 1980, the FBI placed Cyrus Hashemi, an Iranian banker, under extensive electronic surveillance, recording tens of thousands of conversations over a five-month span. The tapes revealed that John Stanley Pottinger, Hashemi's attorney, was helping the Iranians circumvent the arms embargo using phony invoices and overseas shell companies. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee later found that the CIA was involved in planning the arms deals and had met with Hashemi in Pottinger's office. Pottinger, it turns out, was working together with Epstein in New York. Pottinger had previously served as an assistant attorney general under President Richard Nixon. Now he joined up with another crook, and the two men rented a penthouse office together on Central Park South, according to the New York Times. The Times reported that Pottinger and Epstein were pitching tax avoidance strategies for wealthy clients. The business partnership was short-lived. In 1984, Pottinger was identified in a federal indictment against Hashemi for illegal arms exports, and Hashemi fled to England. Pottinger escaped prosecution after the incriminating FBI tapes of his conversations mysteriously disappeared. He went on to make a fortune on real estate deals in the 1980s and became a New York Times best-selling novelist. He died last year, and his Times obit reports that his final spy thriller remains unpublished. Hashemi died in 1986 after being infected with a rare form of leukemia that was diagnosed only 2 days earlier. His death was later alleged to be foul play. After Hashemi's indictment, another player stepped in to broker access to Iran for the Americans. Saudi arms dealer Adnan Khashoggi, uncle of slain Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi. In July 1985, Hashemi, Khashoggi, and Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres had met secretly in Hamburg, West Germany, to hatch a plot. With CIA Director William Casey's blessing, the US would ship the weapons to Israel. Israel would sell its own weapons to Iran, and Washington would commit to replenishing Israel's stockpile later. Epstein obtained an Austrian passport with a false name and an address in Saudi Arabia at some time in the 1980s. After his arrest in 2019, US authorities discovered it in a safe in his New York mansion. At a bail request hearing, Epstein's attorneys claimed the fake passport came from a friend intended to conceal his Jewish identity in case of a potential kidnapping while traveling. Seven Americans, including a CIA officer, were kidnapped in Lebanon between 1984 and 1985, and discussions emerged around an arms for hostages trade with Iran. After Peres agreed to facilitate Khashoggi's shipments to Iran, the logistics were handled by Israeli military intelligence. Epstein's close friend and confidant, Ehud Barak, was the head of Israel's Military Intelligence Directorate from April 1983 to September 1985. He left the position 1 month after the first arms shipment was completed. To this day, Barak maintains that he was introduced to Epstein by Shimon Peres at a public event in 2003, after he left government service. Barak has also falsely claimed that he barely knew Epstein. Whether they truly met before 2003 is unknown. The Israeli arms pipeline depended on a fragile trust. The Israelis wanted cash up front, but the Iranians would only pay after the weapons were delivered. Using accounts at the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, BCCI, Khashoggi advanced tens of millions of dollars in credit so that weapons could move even when the parties did not trust each other. Gaith Faron, a Stanford-educated businessman close to the Saudi royal family, acquired regional banks and distressed insurance companies in the US to loop BCCI into US financial markets. The CIA shielded BCCI from federal investigators to conceal the money trail to their illicit arms deals. BCCI operated as a Cayman Islands entity structured as a charitable trust, funneling capital into employee benefit funds and philanthropic foundations in the UK and South Asia, which in turn owned a plethora of shell companies. The shells served as parking lots for BCCI assets and conduits for transactions that needed to be hidden from the balance sheets of the bank's local branches around the world. With each successful delivery, an American hostage was freed in Lebanon, and the intermediaries received generous commission payments. Once arms profits had been cycled through BCCI's network, real estate was a method of transforming suspicious cash flows into legitimate sales and rental income, while obscuring the true ownership behind layers of shells. BCCI was heavily involved in real estate lending and property purchases through shells and nominees. Khashoggi himself had massive real estate holdings worldwide, including hotels, ranches, mansions, and commercial properties. Decades before Epstein became a household name, former Israeli intelligence officer Ari Ben-Menashe wrote a memoir about the Iran-Contra era. Ben-Menashe reported that Ehud Barak feared Israeli politicians or the Americans would discover the slush fund bank accounts where the arms profits were hidden and take the money for themselves. Ben-Menashe claimed that Barak arranged for media mogul Robert Maxwell, Ghislaine Maxwell's father, to launder the Iran weapons profits through his company's accounts and hide the money in Soviet banks where they could not be touched by the Americans. In 1991, 4 years after Iran-Contra, Maxwell disappeared from his 180-foot yacht, the Lady Ghislaine, while it cruised off the Canary Islands. Hours later, Spanish authorities recovered his body from the Atlantic. Maxwell's media empire was collapsing under a mountain of debt, and he was secretly siphoning hundreds of millions of pounds from his company's pension funds. When investigators began untangling the books after his death, they found nearly £500 million missing, and possibly more. An email obtained from Epstein's Yahoo inbox dated October 15, 2005, suggests Ghislaine Maxwell was trying to purchase information about her father's missing fortune from a CIA operative. Maxwell emailed Epstein excitedly while visiting Bhutan for the wedding of Princess Chimi Yangzom Wangchuk. She wrote, "The wedding was amazing. Also, I was with a CIA operative who said that he worked with Dad. I was so shocked. He said he could tell all, find all and reveal all for a price." Epstein often made vague boasts about being a financial bounty hunter who tracked down hidden money. In 1987, while Robert Maxwell was allegedly hiding money from arms deals, Epstein bragged to a journalist about finding money for Adnan Khashoggi in such detail, the journalist thought Epstein might be in the business of hiding it as well as finding it. Part 2. Logistics Man. When the Southern Air transport plane was shot down over Nicaragua in October 1986, the Iran-Contra scheme began to unravel. After he was captured, the lone survivor confessed in a conference before the world's press that he was working with the CIA to ferry weapons to the Contras, secretly backing their war against Nicaragua's leftist government. US officials quickly denied the confession, saying the plane was on a private mission. But Southern Air Transport was not only shipping weapons to the Contras, the planes were also carrying weapons to Israel to fuel the brutal war between Iran and Iraq. Just weeks after Hassan Fuss's press conference, the airline flew its last Iran-Contra mission from Tel Aviv to Tehran, carrying 500 US-made anti-tank missiles. 1 month later, a Lebanese newspaper broke the story that the Iran arms sales were part of a secret deal in exchange for the release of Americans taken hostage in Lebanon. US officials confirmed the reports, spurring an investigation by the Justice Department. The US Attorney General was forced to step in front of news cameras and acknowledge that profits from the Iran shipments were secretly fueling the Contras. Then, newspapers started making the connection that the same planes were smuggling cocaine from Nicaragua and Colombia into the United States. The story became a major political scandal in the US. In December 1986, reports emerged that Khashoggi received tens of millions of dollars for brokering the deals. In January 1987, Khashoggi's US holding company filed for bankruptcy. BCCI's frontman, Gaith Faron, sold off his bank assets soon after. Meanwhile, the airline also began covering its tracks. Southern Air Transport, which was now flagged in DEA databases for suspected cocaine trafficking, pivoted to famine relief missions in war-torn countries in Africa for the United Nations. Within months, Epstein appeared to be absorbing lessons from the era's covert financial engineering. In 1987, as the Iran-Contra operation was unraveling, he emerged as a key financial advisor to retail and fashion kingpin Leslie Wexner. Epstein became an officer of several Wexner shell companies, while later leading the same family office that ran Wexner's philanthropic foundation. This was an architecture that, like BCCI, placed a charitable vehicle at the apex of a vast web of companies. That same year, Wexner established the New Albany Company, a massive real estate development project to build a new city in a rural area outside Columbus, Ohio. Later in 1987, Epstein reprised another BCCI tactic: sell a story to state regulators to gain control of a financial institution, then pillage its assets. Just as BCCI used Gaith Faron as a nominee to acquire insurance companies, Epstein helped Stephen Hoffenberg persuade Illinois regulators to approve the purchase of two ailing insurers by promising a $3 million capital injection from Hoffenberg's debt collection agency, Towers Financial. The money never arrived, of course. After closing the sale, they used the insurers' bonds as collateral to finance hostile takeovers of two struggling airline companies, Pan Am and Emery Worldwide. Towers Financial became a slush fund that subsidized Epstein's lavish lifestyle in New York. After it collapsed in 1993, Hoffenberg pleaded guilty to defrauding investors out of nearly half a billion dollars in what the SEC called the largest Ponzi scheme in US history at the time. He was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He later described Epstein as his co-conspirator, though Epstein was never charged.
The stolen money, however, vanished. In 2002, Hoffenberg alleged that Epstein hid $100 million in offshore accounts. He knew Epstein worked with prosecutors to scapegoat him and other Towers financial executives. Epstein certainly did secretly cooperate against Hoffenberg and gave at least three interviews to prosecutors, Vicky Ward reported for Rolling Stone, adding that had the case gone to trial, a source with knowledge says it would have likely turned out far worse for Epstein than for Hoffenberg. In that 2002 interview, Hoffenberg also helped to piece together part of Epstein's past. He told Ward that he believed it was Douglas Leese who had introduced Epstein to Adnan Khashoggi. When Ward asked Epstein to respond to Hoffenberg's claims, Epstein said he didn't know Leese and furiously rejected any association with the Towers financial fraud. Epstein threatened to sue Ward if her story insinuated his culpability in the Ponzi scheme. And when Vanity Fair attempted to revive the story in 2007, private messages in his Yahoo inbox show that Epstein drafted letters to Ward's editor, Graydon Carter, railing against her piece and threatening again to sue for defamation. In drafts sent to himself by email, he wrote, "I am writing to you to give you the opportunity, while it still exists, to correct a wrong." Epstein may have been counseled against sending those emails. Carter told DropSite he never received them. One thing is clear. Epstein lied to Ward about his ties to the Leese family. He knew both of Douglas Leese's two sons very well. The elder brother, Nicholas, wrote a bawdy letter in Epstein's 50th birthday book containing anecdotes of escapades in Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, and Tramp Nightclub in London. The relationship between Epstein and the Leeses remained intimate over the years. According to the emails obtained by DropSite, Epstein was the godfather of Leese's granddaughter, and both brothers affectionately addressed Epstein in their emails as "my boy." In 2007, Julian Leese sent Epstein a collection of family photos, writing, "Always thinking of you and the old days." Julian Leese briefly worked as an intern at Towers Financial after graduating from University of Salford. He told journalist Tom Pattinson that his father had supported Towers Financial by introducing Hoffenberg to people in his circle. In his final recorded interview, Julian claimed his father sold radar equipment, not weapons, and admitted that Epstein occasionally advised his father and was present at some of his business meetings. In the early 1980s, he said Epstein and his father had a falling out over Epstein's reckless spending from one of his father's expense accounts. In light of Epstein's immediate pivot to working with shadowy Iran-Contra figures, Julian's interview raises more questions than it answers. Julian passed away in 2024. Part 3. Corruption all over the city and state. While the Towers financial Ponzi scheme was taking off, Epstein had risen to the status of chief financial advisor to Wexner's business empire, built around his clothing company The Limited, headquartered in Ohio. Epstein also became the financial engineer and trusted fixer behind Wexner's massive real estate development project in New Albany. By 1991, the New York Times described Epstein as president of Wexner Investment Company. Epstein's sudden rise baffled Wexner's old advisors, who were pushed out of Wexner's organization one by one. Although Epstein is sometimes described as a con artist who beguiled a naive billionaire, the series of events leading up to Epstein's takeover of Wexner's fortune paint a very different picture.
In 1991, the Columbus Police Department was investigating the mob-style assassination of Arthur Shapiro, an attorney whose firm worked for the Limited. In March 1985, Shapiro was due to testify before a grand jury in a major tax evasion case. But the day before his testimony, he was shot twice in the head at point-blank range in his car outside a Columbus cemetery.
Barry Kessler, an accountant, was considered the prime suspect in Shapiro's murder. He was later convicted for two unrelated murder-for-hire plots and sentenced to death. Another Columbus man sharing his last name, John Jack Kessler, was Wexner's partner in the New Albany Company, where Epstein became co-president.
On June 6, 1991, a Columbus police analyst submitted an internal memo that suggested Wexner's business was connected to organized crime. The memo identified several Wexner corporate entities formed by the slain lawyer's office, some of which appeared to be linked to Wexner's New Albany property development.
Epstein's name later appeared as an officer of some of these same companies when they were dissolved a few years later. In July 1991, 1 month after the Shapiro murder memo was circulated inside the Columbus Police Department, Wexner signed a document giving Epstein power of attorney to act on his behalf in all affairs, effectively handing Epstein personal control of his vast fortune and the right to sign property transactions on Wexner's behalf.
The Columbus police chief ordered the murder file destroyed. David Sturtz, Ohio's former inspector general, leaked a surviving copy of the Shapiro murder file to journalist Bob Fitrakis, who published it in July 1998. Meanwhile, Miami International Airport made plans to demolish the hangar where Southern Air Transport was suspected of smuggling cocaine, a former U.S. Army depot that had been used by the CIA for more than 20 years.
With Epstein acting as Wexner's logistics man in Ohio, Southern Air Transport relocated its world headquarters to Columbus to deliver products from factories in Hong Kong and southern China directly to Wexner's network of Limited Brands stores.
The Ohio Department of Development and Rickenbacker Port Authority assembled a generous incentive package to lure Southern Air Transport out of Miami.
Rickenbacker, an Air National Guard base, was already a well-established military and intelligence hub when Wexner's company planned to turn it into a consumer airport. The Defense Logistics Agency, just 15 miles down the road, was in charge of the global supply chain for weapons systems. A decade earlier, CIA technicians had quietly met Louisiana smuggler Barry Seal at the same base. The CIA installed hidden cameras on Barry Seal's plane before sending him back to Nicaragua on a DEA sting.
The state offered a $6 million low-interest loan and a $500,000 development grant, while the Department of Transportation agreed to pay $10 million for infrastructure upgrades. The Port Authority freed up $30 million in revenue bonds to be used by the project, and the county made the facilities 100% tax-exempt for 15 years. Bob Fitrakis told Dropsite and the American Conservative, "While I was writing investigative articles for Columbus Alive, I found myself inundated with people leaking stories about corruption all over the city and state."
Sturtz, the investigator who leaked the Shapiro murder file, spoke to Fitrakis specifically about Epstein.
"After that, he verbally gave me a lot of information about Wexner and Epstein's ties to organized crime and the intelligence community," Fitrakis said. "That's how I learned about Southern Air Transport." The intrepid journalist contacted former Franklin County Sheriff Earl Smith to find out what he knew about Epstein. He learned that Smith's office was investigating drug smuggling at Rickenbacker in connection with the CIA's planes. He knew Epstein was the point person in soliciting Southern Air Transport to come to Ohio, Fitrakis said. Sturtz was dismissed from the inspector general position in 1994, which he told Fitrakis he believed was connected to his inquiry into Wexner and Southern Air Transport. His successor also resigned after 2 months on the job.
After moving to Columbus, the airline did not shed its drug-smuggling pedigree. In 1996, customs agents discovered cocaine hidden aboard a Southern Air Transport plane, according to a report in an Alabama newspaper. The airline's public information officer told the paper the plane was delivering fresh flowers from a large flower exporter in Colombia. The airline asserted it was not tied to the CIA and would like to know itself where the cocaine came from. By the time the Alabama incident hit newswires, the airline claimed the plane had a mercury contamination and handed the aircraft over to an insurance company. The Columbus experiment ended 1 year later, as more of the airline's sordid smuggling history was dragged into public view. In June 1998, after it had already collected millions of dollars in state subsidies, Southern Air Transport decided to sell off its fleet of Lockheed Hercules planes. On October 1, 1998, Southern Air Transport abruptly filed for bankruptcy. Exactly 1 week later, the CIA released its official findings on the Iran-Contra affair, publicly acknowledging the cocaine trafficking allegations. Part 4. A photo with some African warlords. When Ghislaine Maxwell was interviewed by Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche in July, she was asked whether Epstein ever had any contact with intelligence agencies. Maxwell gave a vague response about Epstein's business of finding money in Africa in the 1980s. "I think he may have suggested that there was some people who helped him," Maxwell said. "He showed me a photograph that he had with some African warlords or something. That's the only actual active memory I have of something nefarious. Not nefarious, but covert, I suppose would be the word." In parallel to Iran-Contra, from 1984 to 1986, Southern Air Transport flew hundreds of trips inside Angola, with some runs connecting the capital city Luanda to Dobbins Air Force Base in Marietta, Georgia. Angola's northeastern diamond mining towns, cut off by unsafe roads and railways, were largely accessible only by air. The airline obtained a lucrative contract from Angola's state-owned mining company to carry equipment to the mining towns and carry diamonds out. While making trips to the mines, the planes were suspected of airdropping weapons to the rebel group UNITA, with South Africa's support. South Africa profited handsomely from the Angolan civil war. Johannesburg became a booming re-export hub for illicit Angolan diamonds, as UNITA-controlled blood diamonds were under UN embargo and could not be exported legally from Angola. By the late 1990s, UNITA earned billions of dollars by smuggling diamonds to Johannesburg, where they re-exported with false certificates of origin and shipped onward to London and Belgium. A UN report estimated that over $1 million worth of diamonds were smuggled out of Angola per day in 2001. Angola was the mirror image of Iran-Contra. As in Iran, Saudi money was the bank for Angola's war. As in Nicaragua, the diamonds, like the drugs, were fueled by an off-the-books arms trade. An associate of Saudi ruler King Fahd testified before Congress that Saudi aid to UNITA was part of an informal deal with Washington in exchange for access to mobile radar surveillance systems. He recounted being told that tens of millions of dollars had been funneled through Morocco to train UNITA fighters, and claimed Prince Bandar had planned to sell oil to South Africa. The Saudi government has denied these claims. In Columbus, the collapse of Southern Air Transport was written off as the result of financial troubles. But before declaring bankruptcy in 1998, half of its fleet of Lockheed Hercules planes was sold to Transafrique, an Angolan airline based in the United Arab Emirates.
Southern Air Transport resumed its missions, supporting diamond mining operations, as Angola's civil war raged on. Decades later, Epstein bragged to journalists about making his fortune out of arms, drugs, and diamonds. Epstein, for his part, only came to the attention of the international press after agreeing to ferry former President Bill Clinton around Africa in 2002 on his private jet. Speaking to Hoffenberg in prison that year, journalist Vicky Ward asked why a man who had thrived in the shadows would risk so much with such a public spectacle. "He can't help himself. He broke his own rule," Hoffenberg said. "He always said he knew the only way he could get away with everything he did was to stay under the radar. That now he's gone and blown it." Epstein's claim to have barely known Hoffenberg and Wexner's attempts to personally distance himself from Epstein are undermined by the fact that both men knew Epstein's cardinal rule, a rule he was apparently preternaturally unable to follow. On June 30, 2008, the Florida State Court accepted Epstein's guilty plea to state charges of soliciting a minor for prostitution. 4 days before, Leslie Wexner sent his friend an email. "Abigail told me the result. All I can say is, I feel sorry. You violated your own number one rule. Always be careful." If you enjoyed this story, support our work by visiting dropsitenews.com and become a paid subscriber. All subscriptions are fully tax deductible.